Welcome, you have reached the Philip Candic Philosophical Podcast. Candic Philosophical Podcast. Candic Philosophical Podcast. Candic Philosophical Podcast.
They had almost finished with the loading. Outside stood the Optus, his arms folded, his face sunk in gloom. Captain Franco walked leisurely down the gangplank, grinning. "What's the matter?" he said. "You're all getting paid for this." The Optus said nothing. He turned away, collecting his robes. The captain put his boot on the hem of the robe. "Just a minute, don't go off. I'm not finished." "Oh?" The Optus turned with dignity. "I am going back to the village." He looked towards the animals and birds being driven up the gangplank into the spaceship. "I must organise new hunts." Franco lit a cigarette. "Why not? You people can go out into the veldt and track it all down again. But when we run halfway between Mars and Earth..." The Optus went off wordless. Franco joined the first mate at the bottom of the gangplank. "How's it coming?" he asked. He looked at his watch. "We got a good bargain here." The mate glanced at him sourly. "How do you explain that? What's the matter with you? We need it more than they do." "I'll see you later, Captain." The mate threaded his way up the plank, between the long-legged Martian go-birds, into the ship. Franco watched him disappear. He was starting up after him, up the plank, towards the port, when he saw it.
Welcome, fellow travellers, in the science fiction journey we're about to embark on. I'm here with Adam Holbert. My name's Philip Young. We're going to embark on a journey through all of this short fiction and hopefully novels of Philip K. Dick's entire work, which will take us on a very interesting journey through the world of paranoia and science fiction in general, travelling to far-off distant lands and planets, and possibly encountering many, many curious characters.
Our story is Beyond Lies the Wub.
Well, the story Beyond Lies the Wub was Philip's first published novel. He sold his first novel in 1951. I'm not sure when this was published.
This one was published in 1952. Yeah, it was published in Planet Stories, in the tradition of amazing stories, pulpy sci-fi circulars.
Analog magazine comes to mind.
We've got our two people. We've got the captain of the ship, who we're assuming is from Earth. And then we have the Optus, who's a Martian. And a whole heap of animals going up the gangplank.
There's a line in there that says, "We need them more than they do." That would suggest that the natives are living on a planet with abundant animals and life, and these travellers in their ship come from a place with a deficit in animals and Martian go-birds.
So that could be Earth. There's definitely a deficit of both of those things on this planet.
Oh, that's right, actually. We talk about being halfway between Mars and Earth.
We get the feeling it's a bit of a dodgy trade. Captain Franco is being a bit contemptuous. I mean, the Optus is trying to leave. He just steps on his robe, stops him from leaving.
A little bit of unfair trade, if you will.
Nevertheless, they've been coerced into this trade and all the animals are moving up the gangplank. One of the staff on the ship returns carrying, I guess you would describe, a giant pig thing.
It's a pig, a huge dirty pig.
It's basically a huge dirty pig.
Franco delightfully describes it as.
Right, nice. Huge dirty pig. 400 pounds, I think, is the figure.
That's slightly less than 200 kilograms.
That's heavy. So it's a big, heavy, lumbering pig thing. This staff member, Peterson is his name, has obtained this pig thing from one of the Martian natives for a fairly cheap fee of 50 cents.
He got it for 50.
And this wub, we don't know if it's an unfair deal, but it was happily sold. And Peterson, he doesn't quite know what he's going to do with it, really. The price was right. He talks about maybe he'll eat it.
It definitely justifies itself as a curiosity amongst anything else.
Yeah, well, that's true. I guess it's not often that you travel thousands of kilometres to a new planet.
And taste new and delicious meats.
Mmm. So we've got a wub. We've got a fat, large, prodigious wub. In fact, this wub was so large that they make a bit more banter about having to recalculate the ballast for takeoff. Peterson's quite happy to feed it. He's quite excited. He's grown a bit fond of it. The wub's looking a bit upset. He workshops that it might need some water, gives it some water, and the wub's pretty happy. So we're at a stage with a happy wub when Captain Franco brings up the idea of, great, how's it going to taste?
The cook is summoned. I want him here, I want to find out. And then all of a sudden, the wub speaks. Really, Captain, the wub said, I suggest we talk about the matters. The room was silent.
Right, so it's a speaking pig from Mars, which neither us nor the crew would have expected. What would be your reaction, Phil, if you were taking cargo home from Mars, you had a giant pig, it suddenly started talking to you?
Well, the crew tend to exemplify what I would be thinking as well. A, whether there's a native inside it, definitely. And then maybe we should open it up and have a look. It's always my first port of call.
The Trojan horse.
Investigate further.
As it was. Investigate further. Right, see, because I think I would just be a bit stunned, maybe. I suppose they're already talking to the Martians, so there's communication going on there.
I think they're also fairly au fait with strange and unusual animals.
Right.
Go-birds, for example.
Go-birds. See, I imagine the go-birds to be like ibises. That'd be great going to Mars and there's all these long-legged birds strolling around.
Different sized drumsticks for different members of the family.
I imagine long, thin legs, actually. I don't see go-birds as being very delectable. But they were worth bringing back to Earth, so maybe you're right.
Maybe Earth doesn't have any wildlife anymore. Maybe it's all barren.
It's quite possible, because it is a long way to go. I mean, perhaps for scientific research, but the crew, they're talking about eating all these animals. They seem pretty stomach-focused. So, yes, our wub is busted out. Guys, let's not eat meat.
The wub also does seem to be very astute, more so than the actual crew of the ship. It seems to be fairly contented, fairly articulate.
The captain's like, what? No, I'm going to eat ya. He seems particularly unfazed by the whole scenario. And a bit of a dialogue ensues in which the wub says, all right, come on, let's just talk about this somewhere. So they do go into the captain's quarters reluctantly. The captain's quite hungry, but he sends the cook away. And they talk about the wub's fate.
The captain nodded impatiently. He sat down at his desk and folded his hands. All right, he said. Let's get started. You're a wub. Is that correct? The wub shrugged. I suppose so. That's what they call us, the natives, I mean. We have our own term. And you speak English? You've been in contact with the Earthmen before? No. Then how do you do it? Speak English? Am I speaking English? I'm not conscious of speaking anything in particular. I examined your mind. My mind? I studied the contents, especially the semantic warehouse as I refer to it. I see, the captain said. Telepathy, of course. We are a very old race, the wub said. Very old and very ponderous. It is difficult for us to move around. You can appreciate anything so slow and heavy would be at the mercy of more agile forms of life. There was no use in our relying on physical defences. How could we win? Too heavy to run? Too soft to fight? Too good-natured to hunt for game? How do you live? Plants, vegetables, we can eat almost anything. We're very Catholic. Tolerant, eclectic, Catholic. We live and let live. That's how we've gotten along. The wub eyed the captain. And that's why I so violently objected to this business about having me boiled.
Yes, well, the wub speaks English, and that's an interesting point. We wonder if the wub has encountered Earthmen before.
And the wub has a great way of responding. It basically says, oh, I'm speaking English, am I? Okay. I communicate by looking through the contents of your mind. And the wub calls it a semantic warehouse. You've got this warehouse of symbols, and it kind of browses through and puts together meaningful sentences by piecing together items from the semantic warehouse.
I think that's a really good turn of phrase. I think we should incorporate that into our everyday lives.
Give us an example there, Phil.
Well, I would like to say that my prolific use of profanity is sometimes using the sweepings from the floor of my semantic warehouse.
So there's your apologies. Oh, I'm sorry for that language. I
was reduced to picking things up off the floor.
Nice. Okay, well, I mean, the wub doesn't need to just go for the scraps on the floor of the semantic warehouse.
So you read minds, the captain said. How interesting. Anything else? I mean, what else can you do along those lines? A few odds and ends, the wub said absently, staring around the room. A nice apartment you have here, Captain. You keep it quite neat. I respect life forms that are tidy. Some Martian birds are quite tidy. They throw things out of their nests and sweep them. Indeed, the captain nodded. But to get back to the problem... Quite so. You spoke of dining on me. The taste, I am told, is good. A little fatty, but tender. But how can any lasting contact be established between your people and mine if you resort to such barbaric attitudes? Eat me? Rather, you should discuss questions with me. Philosophy. The arts. The captain stood up. Philosophy. It might interest you to know that we will be hard put to find something to eat for the next month. An unfortunate spoilage. I know, the wub nodded. But wouldn't it be more in accord with your principles of democracy if we all drew straws, or something along those lines? After all, democracy is to protect the minority from just such infringements. Now, if each of us casts one vote... The captain walked to the door. Nuts to you, he said. He opened the door. He opened his mouth. He stood frozen, his mouth wide, his eyes staring, his fingers still on the knob. The wub watched him. Presently, it padded out of the room, edging past the captain. It went down the hall, deep in meditation.
Okay, well, the captain seems to mostly want to talk about food. Well, he makes a couple of points. The first point is, we don't know how you taste. You're probably delicious. And the wub agrees. But also, the wub gives a little bit of a backstory as to... the race of wub. It's a tolerant old school race that, despite being large, clearly not the winners in terms of the traditionally understood ideal of natural selection.
If Jabba the Hutt had a nice twin.
Yeah, that's right. A pleasant Jabba. And so he's saying the way they've survived, they've eaten lots of vegetables. When he talks about they haven't any physical way of getting ahead, perhaps there's a hint that there's something mental and psychological, something they can do with the semantic warehouse that has helped them get by. So the wub goes on to say, listen, you can eat me. I've heard we taste pretty good. I can understand your desire to eat me. But there's a problem because we're two species that are meeting for the first time. This doesn't set up a very good exchange.
And it's an opportunity squandered for the Earthmen to potentially be enlightened through this meeting.
Yeah, so he makes that argument. The captain makes the counter-argument of, we've got a long way and we've got to eat something.
Due to an unfortunate spoilage.
Unfortunate spoilage, yeah. So this is the first we hear about this spoilage. And it is quite a conundrum. So it seems like... as much as the captain does seem like a bit of a tool, shall I say, to be polite, so not sweep the floor of my semantic warehouse, but this is a problem. There's been spoilage. They hadn't calculated for it. They've got a long way to go. What are they going to eat? The wub gets this, but he responds by saying, well, listen, let's just draw straws or do something. You know, you guys have this approach of democracy. Let's get democratic about this.
The wub's very smart. He's actually playing his cards well. He's already established a relationship with Peterson. And there's also a certain amount of doubt in Franco's mind as well. So they could work to his advantage, for sure.
So we see this relationship with Peterson. They start talking about philosophy. I love this bit. This is gold right here.
The room was quiet. So you see, the wub said, we have a common myth. Your mind contains many familiar myth symbols. Ishtar, Odysseus. Peterson sat silently, staring at the floor. He shifted in his chair. I find in your Odysseus a figure common to the mythology of most self-conscious races. As I interpret it, Odysseus wanders as an individual, aware of himself as such. This is an idea of separation from family and country, the process of individuation. But Odysseus returns to his home. Peter looked out at the port window, at the stars, endless stars, burning intently in the empty universe. Finally, he goes home, as must all creatures. The moment of separation is a temporary period, a brief journey of the soul. It begins, it ends. The wanderer returns to land and race. The door opened. The wub stopped, turning its great head.
All right, and in walks the captain. If anything's going to spoil a good philosophical discussion, it's got to be Captain Franco. Before we get to this rude interruption by the captain, we've got a pretty dense passage.
Should we start with Odysseus?
Well, actually, let's... I noticed Ishtar was thrown in there just before Odysseus. I used the power of Wikipedia and noticed that Ishtar was from Assyria, Babylon, and was a goddess of fertility, love, war, and sex.
All those good things.
What a combo. Basically a one-woman action movie, it would seem. And I also noted, which just seemed interesting, is at one point she blagged away into Hades, or maybe it wasn't Hades, the underworld, and went on a bit of an adventure down there, and no one got to have sex while ever she was, you know, in the afterlife / underworld. Rough time for the world.
It's a good thing that she got back.
It is a good thing that she got back. But I think maybe Odysseus plays more of a role in the present discussion.
Well, Odysseus is very similar to the character of Ulysses, who you may know from Ulysses
31.
Ulysses, soaring through all the galaxies, fly to Earth and into our light.
Well, that's just what the wub did, isn't it, really?
It did. I mean, these guys are doing exactly what the Ulysses series was doing. They're ambling through the universe, coming across different characters and different animals and planets, and having deep and meaningful conversations. Actually, now that you think of it, there's a lot of Philip K. Dick in Ulysses. There's the automatic robots that try and destroy Ulysses when they land on the planet.
Yes.
Which features heavily in The Gun.
In The Gun, which we'll get to next week, actually. Depending on your context, the actual physical semblance of the semantic warehouse is going to be different. These myths are the same, so the outward form is different, but this myth of individuation is common, the wub says, to many cultures, which is the first time we really hear that the wub is actually quite cosmopolitan. When I was first reading this, just thought that, you know, Mars was maybe a bit of a backwards, yet here we have a pig-like creature that not only can talk intelligently of human philosophy, but compare it to the philosophy of other races.
I wonder where he picks all this up. Maybe at the speakeasies on the Veldt where he comes from.
So, Odysseus, similar to Ulysses 31.
An eternal wanderer defines himself through his journeys and his experiences.
One day to return home. And you get the feeling that Peterson, he's on the return phase of that journey. He's looking out to, how does he describe it? The stars, endless stars, burning intently in an empty universe. It's not just a simple on your ute picking up the produce. You get the feeling it's been a long journey.
Peterson's got cabin fever to the point where he's actually starting to get philosophical, staring into the black hole, which is the navel of the universe.
They're frolicking around the semantic warehouse, and the captain pops in. Dinner time, suckers. Basically, am I reading the scenario right here?
Oh yeah, you're absolutely correct in that. I think Peterson's a little bit ineffectual at this point in time.
Well, actually, Captain Franco, just to show what a true douche he is, actually wants Peterson to kill the Wob. He has a gun and he's ordering Peterson to come over and shoot it. Which is pretty, it's a little bit brutal.
As any good captain would do.
You are quite afraid, aren't you? The Wob said. Have I done anything to you? I am against the idea of hurting. All I have done is try to protect myself. Can you expect me to rush eagerly to my death? I am a sensible being like yourselves. I was curious to see your ship, learn about you. I suggested to the native. The gun jerked. See, Franco said. I thought so. The Wub settled down, panting. It put its paws out, pulling its tail around it. It is very warm, the Wub said. I understand we are close to the jets. Atomic power. You have done so many wonderful things with it, technically. Apparently your scientific hierarchy is not equipped to solve moral, ethical... Franco turned to the men, crowding behind him wide-eyed, silent. I'll do it. You can watch. French nodded. Try to hit the brain. It's no good for eating. Don't hit the chest. If the ribcage shatters... We'll have to pick bones out. Listen, Peterson said, licking his lips. Has it done anything? What harm has it done? I'm asking you. And anyhow, it's still mine. You have no right to shoot it. It doesn't belong to you. Franco raised his gun. I'm going out, Jones said, his face white and sick. I don't want to see it. Me too, French said. The men struggled out, murmuring. Peterson lingered to the door. It was talking to me about myths. It wouldn't hurt anyone. He went outside. Franco walked towards the Wub. The Wub looked up slowly. It swallowed. A very foolish thing, it said. I am sorry that you want to do it. There was a parable that your savior related. It stopped, staring at the gun. Can you look me in the eye and do it? The Wub said. Can you do that? The captain gazed down. I can look you in the eye, he said. Back on the farm we had hogs, dirty razorback hogs. I can do it. Staring down at the Wub, into his gleaming, moist eyes, he pressed the trigger.
So kablam, death row for our friend the Wub.
Now, Philip K. Dick doesn't really paint a very good picture of our society at the time. If we just extract ourselves from the story a little. The scientific hierarchy is not equipped to solve moral or ethical problems or dilemmas. Also unfortunate enough to have encountered not the great scholars of humanity, but space truckers.
Space truckers, yeah. And some of these space truckers have a heart of gold. Peterson is to the end, it's my Wub. You can't kill my Wub. And he says it was talking to me about myths. It wouldn't hurt anyone. It comes to the point where the captain's about to shoot the Wub, and it's surprisingly chilled out about the whole affair. It said its piece, but now it's pretty calm. Just says, basically, I've got one last request for you. While you do it, could you look me in the eye? You know, do it honourably. And the captain does that. He's like, sure, I'm used to killing pigs at home. I can look you in the eye.
Dirty razorback hogs.
And he looks him in the eye, pulls the trigger. Blam. Cut to dining scene.
Let's go back a little. The wub mentioned there was a parable that your saviour related. So, in the semantic warehouse, he's come across this large bookshelf devoted to Christianity, and he's using Christianity as his last-ditch reasoning. What do you think he was getting at there? What was this parable? Could it be the story of Judas? Could it be the story of Lazarus? Could it be the story of Cain and Abel? I'm not sure. My warehouse suffered a fire in that department.
Understandable. Yeah, well, that's the thing. We never know. We never know because the discussion is cut short. And this is, you know, seemingly the tragedy of this whole thing. They're going to be able to have a nice meal at this loss of an alien intelligence that is able to go into their semantic warehouse, view it from another position. We're talking second-order cybernetics here. We're talking being able to see thinking outside of thought itself, so seeing the process of thought as well as the contents of thought, and then to be able to express that, you know, perfectly from the perspective of a totally different race.
From a sentient being that actually understands the human race in its historical context as well, and its fictional context, its cultural paradigms, better than these guys understand themselves.
So, yes, we're never going to know what parable, and we suffer a vast, almost unthinkable loss. However, the space truckers are going to be well-fed.
It's almost as though the wub is actually giving these space truckers a chance to live up to all the amazing things that he exemplifies about the human race. See, the wub seems to hold these guys, well, seems to hold humanity in quite a high regard, yet he's conflicted because he's faced with humanity's less than stellar examples.
Yeah, that seems quite true. Obviously, he knew enough about humanity to be intrigued enough to convince someone to sell him onto the ship. So he's definitely sought out this kind of exchange. The wub, or the wub, or the whichever creature it is.
Wobe.
The wobe. It's kind of like a combination of womb and hub. But yeah, so we get to the dinner. Captain Franco is there, eating heaps, drinking lots of wine.
This would be a wrap-up then.
Yeah, this is the wrap-up here. Franco's got what he wants. He's having a fine meal. Peterson's miserable, as so it would seem. Then the captain says something unusual. Okay, let's have a reading for this.
The taste was excellent. They sat glumly around the table, some of them hardly eating at all. The only one who seemed to be enjoying himself was Captain Franco. More? He said, looking around. More? And some wine, perhaps. Not me, French said. I think I'll go back to the chart room. Me too. Jones stood up, pushing his chair back. I'll see you later. The captain watched them go. Some of the others excused themselves. What do you suppose the matter is? The captain said. He turned to Peterson. Peterson sat staring down at his plate, at the potatoes, the green peas, and the thick slab of tender, warm meat. He opened his mouth. No sound came. The captain put his hand on Peterson's shoulder. It's only organic matter now, he said. The life essence is gone. He ate, spooning up the gravy with some bread. I, myself, love to eat. It's one of the greatest things that a living creature can enjoy. Eating, resting, meditation, discussing things. Peterson nodded. Two more men got up and went out. The captain drank some water and sighed. Well, he said, I must say this was a very enjoyable meal. All the reports I had heard were quite true. The taste of the wub, very fine. But I was prevented from enjoying this in times past. He dabbed at his lips with his napkin and leaned back in his chair. Peterson stared dejectedly at the table. The captain watched him intently. He leaned over. Come, come, he said. Cheer up. Let's discuss things. He smiled. As I was saying before I was interrupted, the role of Odysseus in the myths. Peterson jerked up, staring. To go on, the captain said. Odysseus, as I understand him.
Bum bum.
Bum bum.
That's a clincher. Very nice little cliffhanger there. Thanks, Philip.
So what went on there? How did this happen? Clearly some kind of...
organic transference of soul or psyche. Through the stomach.
Or through the eyes.
Or through
because
the eyes.
Because Idigri asked that he looked him in the eyes as he killed him.
That's right.
What do we think about this ending?
Well, the wub has... well, to me... the wub has obviously accumulated all this wonderful knowledge and insight by going through many different incarnations and travelling the universe. Studying, chatting with people. There's a joke there about Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Just can't get to it somehow.
Well, going to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, I imagined that moment where one of the creatures at the restaurant at the end of the universe...
The pig.
The pig. There is a pig there, and he's been specially bred to be eaten.
Oh, yeah, for my rump's very tasty.
Yeah, so he's able to, you know, spruik himself as a good meal. And this is kind of what the wub has done here. He's, you know, he acknowledged that the taste was excellent and bounced it back to the earthlings to choose whether or not to eat him. So it's not really about killing animals, because he's quite happy to eat the...
It was a victimless crime. Everyone got what they wanted.
Yeah, except the captain's been disturbingly displaced.
He's in the corner of the warehouse. Bound and gagged.
There it is. Beyond Lies the Wub, Philip K. Dick's very first published short story. Okay, so I have a question for you about this. The story is called Beyond Lies the Wub. What do you make of that title? What's this beyond? And what's the wub doing lying? Like,
well, I think it partly refers to our own mortality. Beyond is always referred to as the afterlife, perhaps. It could also mean beyond as in other planets, other universes. But in relation to this story in particular, beyond could refer to the captain's fate.
Right. So beyond being a self-satisfied, power-abusing douchebag lies the wub.
He transcends by eating pork.
Interesting. It's an interesting tale. Did you like it, Phil, this one?
I personally loved this one. I thought it was very tight. I thought it was a fantastic piece. It only had really three characters. I thought it was tied up very nicely, as we'll find later on as we go through Philip K. Dick's works. He does enjoy the odd cliffhanger ending, which I find particularly enjoyable.
Yeah, and which perhaps came with the medium too. I'm sure Planet Stories was keen for a cliffhanger ending.
I thought this was great. I thought you couldn't see where it was going. I thought it took you there to the very end. It had great opportunities to explore some of the things that are universal to humanity, even though it's set in space and they're encountering Martian landscapes and new creatures and different aliens, that it's actually all about humanity. It's about our philosophy, our mythology, our motivations, what makes us good, what makes us bad. It's not terribly judgmental. It's a curious musing. There's all kinds of stuff there. It's a rich textured little story. It's got everything from reincarnation, religion, saviors. They mention Jesus in there, the journey of the individual, enlightenment.
This is our first podcast. We are now, and we always shall be, interested in hearing what listeners think. If you have anything in your semantic warehouse that can be moved around to provide new insights to the tale, bring it, lay it down on us.
Definitely drop us a line on Facebook or via our website.
You can also email us at pkd@weirdfictionrecords.com.
We hope to see you soon.
See you next week with the gun.
The gun.
See you next week with the gun.